You are now listening to a podcast from Cambridge University Press. And here's your host, Professor Jack C. Richards.
Hello. Today I want to talk about a dimension of teaching that focuses on the environment for learning, not so much the content, whether it be a lesson, a reading lesson or a speaking lesson or whatever, a grammar lesson, but the context, if you like, the background factors that can contribute to the environment in which students are learning. And we want to create a positive learning environment in the classroom. How can we do that? Let's first of all talk about what is called classroom climate. This is the affective side, the emotional side of the classroom, the feelings the students have towards the lesson, towards you, towards their classmates, as well as the learning atmosphere of the classroom. Very important factor in teaching. As a teacher, you need to help students develop a positive view of their class. How do you do this? Well, you have to show respect and care for your students as human beings to establish the right atmosphere, a business-like, a serious atmosphere, but not a threatening one, to communicate appropriate messages about what you're teaching, and also to give your students some sense of control with regard to how they're learning, and also, very importantly, to create a sense of community among your students. Now, teachers do these things in different ways. Some teachers will use humor, for example, to create an informal class atmosphere. That's something I find very important in my graduate classes. By building rapport with students through discussing common interests and concerns, by showing that you're friendly and approachable and are there to help your students, but of course at the same time you are the teacher, you still have to preserve that role that you have as a teacher, that professional role. So you want to create a safe learning environment where students are not afraid to make risks or make mistakes. So the content of a lesson can also have an influence on classroom climate. If the lesson's too difficult, students may become bored and distracted. And, of course, similarly, if the lesson's too easy, they may feel insufficiently challenged. In both situations, the result can be an unmotivated class. So the first issue, then, is to create a positive classroom climate. That means a classroom climate where people have positive expectations about what is going to happen. The second dimension has to do with the way the class is arranged. How do you arrange your classroom? While a lesson plan represents, if you like, a map of the territory you want to cover in a lesson and the route you want to take to get there, a successful lesson depends also on the kinds of interaction you provide for during the lesson. This includes opportunities for interactions between you and the class, as well as interactions among the students themselves. And there are, of course, four different ways of arranging a class, each of which offers different learning potentials and each of which has benefits if it's used appropriately at the right time. These four arrangements are, of course, whole class teaching, individual work, group work, and pair work. Whole class teaching is where you're teaching all of the class together, and you will want to do this some of the time, but not necessarily all of the time. It will depend on where you are in the lesson. Where you're at the beginning of the lesson, for example, you might start with a whole class activity, moving on to pair, group, or individual work. So teacher-fronted whole class teaching can serve to focus students' attention quickly on a learning task, and when it's carefully carried out, it can lead to the quick and effective achievement of lesson objectives. Of course, it also enables you to manage time effectively when the lesson is under the teacher's control. But you need to consider when it's appropriate and not to overuse it so that the whole lesson isn't dominated by teacher-fronted teaching. You also need to find opportunities to move to other type of grouping arrangements. Individual work, for example, where students are completing an assignment or listening to an activity on the tape or in the media lab. Individual work allows students to work at their own pace and at their own proficiency level. Pair work and group work, of course, provide opportunities for sustained interaction and have long been recommended as ways of promoting both accuracy and fluency. And you'll have to think how you can set up groups, how can you arrange groups, because there are issues related to timing, to proficiency level of students in groups, and how you can monitor group learning and group performance. So group and pair work need to be thought about carefully and planned for. And when you're using particular grouping arrangements, such as pair work or group work, it's important to make the purpose of the grouping arrangement clear to the students. Why are they going to do this as a group activity? Why are they going to do this as a pair activity? So having students work in pairs or groups doesn't serve any useful purpose if the teacher continues to teach to the whole class, despite the fact that the students are in pairs or groups. The third issue is time management. How do you use class time? Sometimes I observe a class of 50 minutes and find that the actual teaching and learning time that occurs within those 50 minutes is actually quite limited, because teachers sometimes spend too much time on explanations and instructions and haven't thought about how they're going to set up activities, and so too much time is wasted in arranging students into groups and so on. So even though your class may last from 40 to 50 minutes, not all of that time is available for teaching and learning because of the procedural issues you have to carry out and so on. So you need to think about how you can get the most learning time out of the time available to you in a lesson, and monitor your classroom teaching to ensure that this indeed happens. Because it's quite common for me to observe classes and find that when I look at the amount of practice that individual students do in a 40-minute period, it might be as little as 5 or 6 minutes because so many other things are going on. So think about the amount of time that you have available in a lesson, how you can use that time productively. The next issue has to do with behavior, how to maintain appropriate behavior in the classroom. Because when you're teaching a class, there needs to be among the students the sense of community, a sense that the members of the class are a group working to achieve shared goals. And this won't happen if the students don't take the class seriously, or if some students are allowed to use mobile phones or send text messages and so on during the lesson, or if some students choose to come to class when it suits them. So especially if you're a new teacher, it's important to establish norms early on for appropriate classroom behavior. But of course, that doesn't mean you have to adopt the role of discipline master. You can ask the students to work out these rules for themselves. Give them a task earlier on in the course to ask them what they feel are appropriate rules for classroom behavior and different ways of dealing with classroom issues. For example, there's a wonderful book by Dornier on motivation in the language classroom published by Cambridge, and he has examples of rules that developed by a class for both teachers and students. And they came up with these rules themselves. For example, for students, some of the rules were, let's not be late for class. In school, in small group work, only the second language, only English, can be used. And if you miss a class, make up for it and ask for the homework. So here's a set of rules that students have developed, and also for the teacher. Rules for the teacher: the class should finish on time. Homework and tests should be marked within a week, and always give advance notice of a test. And then some general rules for teachers and students. Let's try and listen to each other. Let's help each other. Let's respect each other's ideas and values. It's okay to make mistakes. They are learning points. And let's not make fun of each other's weaknesses. So you need to think about the kinds of rules that will operate and be accepted in your classroom to govern the kind of interaction that will go on in the classroom. Lastly, we need to work to create what we might call a culturally sensitive classroom. In language classrooms, by their very nature, they contain students with different cultural backgrounds, sometimes different educational backgrounds, different economic backgrounds, and teaching students with different cultural backgrounds requires a particular level of sensitivity and awareness. I think we could say that a culturally responsive classroom is one that legitimizes students' cultures and experiences. This can be achieved by inviting students to share information about their cultures and traditions and by showing a genuine interest in finding more about them. By including information about different cultures and their contributions in lessons, so you can bring into the classroom information that will help students understand about the values of different cultures. So in a culturally sensitive classroom, the goal is to shape the learning environment in such a way that learners of different cultural backgrounds, languages, racial, religious, and ethnic backgrounds, and so on, all feel comfortable. So think about those issues then in planning your teaching and in creating effective language lessons.